Hello again. Thanks for clicking on to this latest podcast in the Jiffy and Stubbsy series. A little bit of background. Long time ago now, Jonathan Davis came up with the idea of talking to people in sport about the issues of the day and all aspects of sport. Dual code rugby union, rugby league star Jiffy Davis asked me to get involved, and I'm delighted. And every week we talk to someone and we have a good laugh, don't we, Jeff? Now, this is slightly different today. This is slightly different because what we thought, because Jiffy is part of your broadcasting career, you're a co-commentator, we thought we'd talk about commentating, the art of sports commentating. And we have a grandmaster joining us. This man has commentated on Premier League games, FA Cup games, Champions League, World Cups. He's done the absolute lot. He's got the awards on his mantelpiece to show for it. And for a little bit of light relief, he commentates on Robot Wars, which is absolutely crazy. Jonathan Pierce, JP, thank you for joining us. JP, thing is, what I've noticed down the years, people get so wound up by football commentators. And I'm sure that reaction comes back to you one way or other. I can never quite understand and believe why people get so wound up about football commentators.
Yeah, when you said grandmaster of the commentary, I had to look behind me. I didn't know you had going on, to be honest. But you're right. And in these days of social media now, you can't say anything. Stubbs, you can't say anything. You're going to alienate someone, so you just have to put up with it. If you say Everton are playing well in this particular game, then fans of the other team, fans of Liverpool across Merseyside, someone will have a go at you. I don't do social media really anymore because it's too painful. I think it's because everyone has an opinion on football. From when you're, you know, when you're a kid, you want to be involved in sport. Inevitably, your primary school get you involved in football first. So you have an opinion from an early age. And I think because there's so much of it and they listen to so many experts and then people borrow expertise from those experts and then believe in it themselves. That's one reason. I guess, you know, they have a strong opinion and they're entitled to that opinion. But we're paid to do a job and luckily I've been able to do that job for a long, long 40 years now this year. 10 World Cups and various things and had the pleasure to work with you for many years. So you just get on with it. And whatever you say, you are going to be damned by a few and praised by a few. Get on with it.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, I've been doing it for 23 years now as a co-commentator, and I'm supposed to be the so-called expert because I think, you know, my role is I listen to the commentator, he says what's happening, and then I come in and say maybe why it's happening because of, you know, experiences. So, and you know, it's great fun to work with them, but it does sadden me to hear, John, that, you know, you're not doing social media because of the fans and the fans' reaction, because social media is now is so emotional. And I'm exactly in the same position as you. Whatever I do, whatever I say, and I'm kind of, because you'd be impartial on most of it, because I know you're a Bristol City fan, so you'd be impartial on most of the games that you do. When I'm doing Wales, I try to be impartial, but obviously I'm a Welsh supporter, so some I get excited. But I will get 50% of the audience saying I'm pro Wales, say, and then 50% of the audience saying I'm pro-England. So what I try and do on social media is introduce them to each other, to be honest, they can crack on with it, because I've kind of got the hard skin now, and I don't really give a monkeys about all the bellends that kind of do things. And it's just, but it does sadden me, because to get your insight on social media as well would be so kind of good for those supporters, because you get an insight, because sometimes you haven't got the time on television to explore your views, whereas on social media people then can, you can explain why you said it. But it's just the idiots are ridiculous now. So times must have changed throughout your career, John.
I'll tell you one thing that frustrates me a little bit at the moment is that, because when you're watching sport on the television, you are watching the editor's cut of that game. Whether it's live or highlights, you're still watching that editor's cut. He's seeing the camera shots come into the scanner and he chooses that picture that you're seeing, but you're not seeing the whole picture of the game. You're not seeing what we're seeing in the stadium. So we might say something and I pass it to you as a co-commentator, you'd enhance it because of your ability as a wonderful rugby union player. And we've made that comment, and then the follow-up comment from you on the basis of what we've seen in the stadium. They might not have seen that because they've only seen the editor's view. Yeah. And they'll take exception to what you've said on the basis of something they haven't necessarily seen. And the other thing is, I might get a piece of information from a manager or a player or a chairman or whatever, and they'll give me that information and they'll say, you can't accredit it to me, but you can get it out in your commentary. Now, I might pass that on in a subtle way in the commentary. I hope it's subtle anyway. But because no one else has heard that in the public domain, people will question it and say, you're wrong. That's the wrong thing. You said the wrong thing. Well, in fact, I know it's right because I've been told it by an authority, but I can't yeah. say it's right because Sir Alex has told me or whatever. And that's a little game that commentators play and have done over the years. You get your informants, you use them, and you pass on that knowledge.
Exactly. I think that's insight and research because you're involved in the game, and that is great because you will have a trust from managers now, which is very, very difficult with current players, with journalists. Yeah. But also then, for me, you know, I notice a difference between club games and then international rugby, you know, where's England, you get 9 million. Then you get more exposure. But in football, again, that is magnified 100 times, isn't it?
It is. And it is one of the reasons it's magnified, because whenever you turn a 24-hour sports station on, a 24-hour news station on, it's there. You turn on Talk Sports on now, that 24-hour sport. Yeah. There are people giving opinions all the time. The way that news gathering to me is developed, you made part of the I'm just using this as another part of the Murdoch Empire, I might say, you know, it's been reported in the Times that, or the Times are alluding to that, then the Sky are running out an angle on that, then the Times will report that, Sky TV are reporting that, and they're getting closer and closer and closer, feeding off themselves without necessarily standing up in the old way. I mean, in the days when you were playing, and Ray Stubbs, you'll back me up on this, we were taught covering sport or any news, and you know, a lot of us got our background doing news as well. You had to have three sources. You can't do a story, you can't put anything in your commentary unless you can back it up with three sources. And that's not social media. That's not going on to someone's social media, because I did a thing at a college in London a couple of years ago, and a kid student showed me a thing he'd done, you know, and I said, that's a cracking story. You could have got that. You could have made money getting that out to the newspaper. Why didn't you do so? I said, well, who's your source? And he said, oh, I picked it off the player's social media. And I went, backed up by who? Well, it was on his social media thing. And I said, well, you don't know he's done that. You don't know that player himself has done that on his social media. He might have had representatives do it. He might have had, you know, a whole host of lackeys do it, because that's what happens these days. You can't just base things on what social media says. It's a great tool. It's fantastic. But on the other hand, it has its drawbacks.
JP, would you say, is it harder today to be distinctive? I think when I first started listening to football commentators, there was a handful of them. As media has mushroomed, now there's a lot more of you all. Is it harder to be distinctive and develop a style that everyone will remember? You have an individual style, but there are so many football commentators today now, I think it's harder for them to really get through.
I would say to anyone going into it now, just be yourself. Don't try and copy anyone, because it's fairly obvious when you're listening to someone that they are trying to emulate one of their heroes and try and be like them. And I think it stands out like a sore thumb. And when I was coming into it, there was John Motson and Barry Davis and Brian Moore and people like John Helm from the ITV regions, you know. And Martin Tyler was in the ITV region at the time. There were very few of them. And on the radio, the people who had great influence on me, like Brian Butler and Peter Jones and that sort of Maurice Edelston, I don't know if people remember him, I can, he's a hero of mine. And I love words, and I love those wordsmiths. And I would try, I've just said don't emulate, don't try and copy someone, but I would try and use words like Brian Butler used them, and I would try and use my voice like Peter Jones used his. But I learned my style from commentating on Subutio matches up in the attic in my house, my parents' house. And I used to, I'd only play myself because that was the, I was guaranteed to win the game. And I used to get very excited, therefore, when I was winning the game 7-6. I'd scored 7 at one end, and I'd scored 6 at the other end. This made me very excited. And so the voice levels rose and rose and rose. So the Subutio table got higher and higher from the living room to my bedroom and then up into the attic so they could get rid of me. And that's where that came from. And when I was really, I mean, I got my first break at camp, you know, I'd already worked for BBC Local Radio and Independent Radio in the West Country and down in Brighton. But Capital Gold came along, gave me the opportunity of my big break, a man called Richard Park, who just said, do it like you want to do it and try and take fans through the magic of radio into that stadium, to that football ground. Try and be, you know, if you sound as if you're as excited as they are, and just do that. Don't cover it up. And that's what I did, really. And I was, you know, unashamedly did it, and thankfully it worked. And we did things like we took the radio program out to grounds that hadn't really been done on a regular basis. It was done for cup finals or World Cups and stuff. But the big rugby before the Five Nations, really, way back when, they used to take it out and do that. But it wasn't done every single night of the week. We would take the program out and we'd immerse the fans in it. That's before social media came along. We'd do the phone in from there, and I think it just enhanced the whole thing. It was great. I love it.
Did you give yourself man of the match in the Subutio match as well, John?
Jonathan, I tell you what, I played the whole of the 1970 World Cup, every single qualifier, Cameroon, Philippines, every country, every game that was played in. Would you believe? I mentioned 7-6 beforehand, but would you believe the final was won 7-6, England beating Scotland 7-6 in the final. And the consolation for Scottish fans, one of my great heroes of the day was Eddie Gray, and he scored a double hat-trick in that game to get man of the match in the World Cup final. And I did reports. Stubbsy, this is what I was like, right? Social life as a kid, no, I don't know. I wrote reports on all these games. I've still got them.
Really?
I've still got them all.
JP, the research that you guys do, commentators as a breed, well, you are a breed. I wonder what the collective noun is for football commentators, by the way. But the research you do is absolutely remarkable. I am in awe of the amount of background research you do. It's never ending, JP.
It isn't. I mean, I've got this research here for the games at the weekend. But because I do work for other companies outside the BBC who do Champions League, Europa League, for the World Feed that goes out to the English-speaking world, and also for BT, you get to a sequence of games. For example, coming up now, I'll do Saturday match of the day, Sunday a French game, Tuesday Champions League, Wednesday Champions League, Thursday Europa League, Friday French, Saturday BBC, Sunday I'm doing a women's game, I think, in the day, and then a BT game, and a French game, and then we're through to another Champions League week. So you've got to try and get ahead. You've got to try and get, otherwise it's impossible. You've got to try and get like 7 or 8 days ahead, otherwise you just fall into the soupy marsh of...
Yeah. Statistics. Are you travelling now, John, or are you doing some in the match, some live, and then some off tube?
Say again?
Are you doing like some games live and then some games off tube?
The games for the World Feed we do off tube, and then they go around the world. That's all live.
Yeah.
And BT is at the moment, a lot of it's off tube. BBC's always at the ground, always live and at the ground. And one of the great mysteries, Stubbs, you'll tell you this. One of the great mysteries of actually, when I do look like George Clooney, don't I? When I take the glasses off, right?
Hang on. I was thinking more Jimmy Tarbuck, to be honest.
One of the big things people say to you about match of the day is you only do 5 minutes of work a week, don't you?
Oh yeah.
You say what? Where do you go to edit the match of the day? The put the voice on the pictures. Do you go to Manchester to do that? And it takes you about 5 minutes. And you say to them, no, we're at the ground. You do the whole 90 minutes, and you've got all the homework beforehand. And you know, it might make a 10-minute edit, or it might make a 3-minute edit. You have no choice over that. But you still do the same research and. A couple of times I thought, well, I'll cut it back. I will cut down on it. And then you go to a ground, you feel totally naked. If you, the whole thing about these compiled reams and reams and reams of sheets of research work. You hope
it is.
You use any of it.
That's my point. Yeah, because I'm I have utmost respect for the commentators, because I've worked, you know, Bill McLaren, Ray French, then Cotter, Andrew Cotter's doing it, right? So I have huge respect for them, because I don't do much research, because my research is watching games, looking what's happening, why it's happening, and then understanding what's going to happen. As you said, Jonathan, I can see things when the camera angle's tight. I can see where the overlap is. I can see where, you know, they should play the game. So it's kind of my experience of playing. But for those notes, I turn up and look at the notes that the commentators have, and I am total awe of it, because, right, majority of the time, they don't use them because the games are good, the game's flowing, and you don't use them. But if there's a break or a long injury or something's happened, that's when the commentators come into their own, and us commentators just sit back and just listen to the commentators, because the research is absolutely phenomenal. Because I listen to all sports. I love sports, right? I watch Match of the Day every week, and then did you listen to the sports commentators and then, you know, pick So who did you look up in other sports?
Pedro Sullivan.
Yeah.
Horse racing. You know, when I'm on a gantry in the ground, there's 22 men in front of me, or 22 women in front of me, all within a fairly confined area. The horse racing commentators have got 36 riders in the fog, a mile and a half away from where they sit. And for a giggle last year, I was invited to do a challenge where I did some horse racing commentary. We did it down at on Ups and Downs, and I was marked on it afterwards, you know, from a mentor. And I was absolutely, and if I could do it, I love horse racing. I'd love to be a horse racing commentator, but I knew I wasn't good enough. And when I did this mock-up thing for a betting company last year, that was proven, because I was absolutely awful. And I'll tell you another commentary story, another sport. When I used to work in radio in Bristol, in independent radio, when I started Radio Bristol, it was football, doing Bristol City games. But when I went to Radio West, they didn't really do football. They were more interested in Bristol and Bar, Gloucestershire and Somerset, the old divisional championships, and Bristol and Bath had runs to the old John Player Cup final, as it was. So I went to Twickenham 3 or 4 years in a row to do this, presenting the programme. And the guy who used to do our rugby was a man called Mike Titcomb. Jonathan, you'll remember Mike Titcomb. He was a referee that was involved in a very controversial incident. I think it was in Ireland, was it? I can't remember what it was anyway. I think he gave a drop goal that shouldn't have been given away. Missed. Anyway, Mike was a lively, sociable soul. And he was a keen taker of refreshment before a commentary. We pitched up at Twickenham, and it was Harlequins against Bristol off the top of my head. And I remember Harlequins had a flying winger. He was fantastic. And so I said, I'm presenting the programme. That's it. I don't have to do the technicalities of rugby, because people who went to school with me would tell you. My dad played rugby at a very good standard, but I was useless. Mike Titcomb turns up 3 sheets to the wind. And he can't do it. So, and he's picked a fight with someone in front of him and got escorted out of Twickenham. So I've now got to do this whole game. You know, I'm not even too sure of the rules. And then what you've got in rugby, of course, you've got 16 big heavens.
Oh, no.
You know, go together. How on earth can you see what's happening down there? You can't.
Yes.
And no. Anyway, so I made it up.
Well, that's the thing. That is the same thing. Now, you're a, you know, predominantly a football commentator. That happened to me, Wales, Italy, where Andrew Cotter he was commentating. 2 minutes later, he kept on going, oh, I'm not well. Didn't say anything to the floor manager, got up and walked off, right? So I'm sat there thinking, God, this is a quiet game. I said, oh, shit, I've got to commentate now. So when you jump from co-commentator into a commentator, that's when you notice the big, big difference. Oh. And then Shane Williams came out. We just like we're having a chat in a pub, like commentating on an international match. So, but then that's what, you know, it's so difficult jumping from one sport to another sport, or from co-commentator as well, a commentator as well, because you realise, because everyone says, oh, I could do that. That's an easy job as a commentator. Yeah, go on then. Go and try it. Any sport. Go and try it.
JP, I have massive respect for you because 90 minutes live on a football match when, as you said before, everybody has an opinion. And how do you guard yourself against, because on 90 minutes, one wrong phrase, that's what people are going to talk about, not the 89 minutes that have been really good. And just that responsibility. I remember, and you and I have both had the privilege of working alongside John Motson. When it came round to the World Cup final, Motty was, I'm not saying a nervous wreck, but those occasions, FA Cup final, World Cup final, they are massive occasions. And people judge you on it. People judge football commentators like no other element of sport. So are you conscious that you're always a phrase away from being in a bit of trouble?
It's getting more nervy. It's harder to keep one foot away from the political correct police. And I am absolutely, I've always, all my life, campaigned for equality in all areas of life, whether it's sport or anything. That's one of my massive beliefs instilled into me by my grandmother, who was a hotel toilet cleaner and was a massive Labour supporter. And she instilled those values into me. So let's just say that first of all.
Yeah.
But when you say something that clearly has no double meaning, when you say something that clearly isn't intended to cause offence and people make something of it and make a story out of it so that it's picked up on it and does therefore go on and offend people, you feel very, very sorry and very ashamed. And therefore you then think next time, you know, is there any way I could have done things differently? We recently went through, quite rightly so, we went through a tuition thing on making sure we avoided sayings from the past that are now clearly known to have racist connotations. Quite rightly, this was absolutely superb. And picked up on things that I didn't know. That had throwbacks to the days of slavery in the USA. So I learned lessons, and I would never have put those sayings into a commentary anyway. But one thing we were, it was very interesting. They were said, make sure you don't just say a black athlete has strength and power without talking about his other attributes. Again, I don't think I've ever done that. But we have a commentator on Match of the Day called Mark Scott, who comes from the BAME community. And he said recently he'd done a commentary with Traore, who went to Wanderers, beat a player with power and pace. And he then thought, he went back to him and thought, could I have said anything else? Was I being insulting to him? Could I have said anything else? No, I couldn't, because that was the phrase that came to mind. And then he said, so then further on in the game, I would try and make amends so that we praise his other qualities. And I would agree with that. You round off a personality. But Rio Ferdinand, in that same tuition thing, said, but you don't have that much time. You don't have that time when you're doing a commentary.
No.
It's split second. How are you supposed to think of all these things when you're doing a commentary? I cannot think there is a single commentator or co-commentator out there who would deliberately say something that would offend people.
I agree. I totally agree. And I do think you would say something innocently, with, you know, not wanting to offend anyone. You know, we've been doing it for so long, right? And the game has changed, and everyone jumps on everything. And you're right, Ray. It's the one thing you say, one little thing. For example, now, you know, I remember 2 years ago, say there's a fisticuffs, which never happened. Now, you can't say, you know, handbags. No, you've got to use man bags. You know, and you don't say it in a homophobic sense. You know, and if you say, you know, Martin Afayo was the best winger I ever played with, and he was the quickest thing. You know, he was so athletic. But, you know, don't say that in a racist kind of way, because he's your friend. And that's the first thing that comes to mind. But it's all these people, if they don't know you, they assume that you're something you're not because of something you've said in a context where it is kind of not insulting a player, but you're saying it in the other way. You're saying that because you're complimenting this bloke because he's such a fantastic player, sportsman, sportswoman, athlete. Isn't it? It is very difficult, Jonathan, because they don't know you as a person, and that they assume you said that because you are, you know, saying in a derogatory manner, which is not why we came into this sport. If we were that kind of manner, we wouldn't be doing the jobs that we're doing.
No, and I think sometimes if you're not doing a commentary, but you're doing a backup program or support program, say, for example, on Five Live or on BBC TV or whatever it is, and you're talking about characters in the game and you'd like to tell a story, but you think, I can't do that because, you know, that might be offensive to someone. And you know, for example, when I was doing the rugby down in the West Country, I used to go over to Bath. The training was on a Thursday. And I used to go over to Bath and do a couple of interviews over there and then get home around about 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. And if you knew Bath at the time, Gareth Chilcott was there and one or two great characters were there, and the captain, Roger Spurrell, had a nightclub that was made out of a public toilet. And so you'd end up doing an interview for 2 minutes and then having a drink. And the same with the Bristol City players and, you know, the Arsenal was a great social... great social setting. And when I cutting my teeth in London radio, when I went there, you can't, you know, I'd like to enhance a story about a player from the past by sort of giving an insight into his character, not his set, in boozes, but because of, you know, funny things they did. But I just worry now whether or not you can say things like that.
No.
I mean, the beauty of being involved in football after all these years is that I love the game. And from first whistle to last whistle, I adore the game. I adore whatever sport it is. I watch the rugby on the telly and, you know, I watch the horse racing. I love that sport, that atmosphere. I have fallen out of love with the politics of football, I'm afraid to say. I've fallen out of love with the economics of football. I hate the situation at the moment. We're going into grounds and doing commentaries at empty grounds. I totally understand it. But it's horrible. And all these things, you know, sometimes I have to admit, Jonathan and Stubbsy, sometimes I think, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to carry on doing this? With all the enmity that's around, with all the bile that's flying around. And then you think, and then the whistle blows. And then the whistle blows and Kevin De Bruyne does something unbelievable with the football. Yeah. You know, and then David Silva last season would have done something unbelievable with the football. And Salah will do something in the box that's wonderful. And you think, that's why I do it.
I'm the same. Hang on, Ray. I'm the same because I'm thinking that the do-gooders now in the game, you know, I think obviously health and safety of the players is part of it. I wish it was the same when I was playing. But I just think that there sometimes social media pressurizes associations to make changes which aren't beneficial to the game. And I think that now, you know, it saddens me, and I feel the same with Jonathan, that sometimes it goes a little bit too far, and I sit back and I think, well, I won't watch unless I'm working on it. I might not watch an international match or a club match because it doesn't attract me like it used to. So, you know, it's sad, but you know, sport. And I think the main thing is, Jonathan has said, sport is so important now to people, and not going to the games with crowds is, oh, guys, it's hard work. You know, going to Wembley and going to Millennium Stadium and doing Wales, it's just, unfortunately, not the same without the crowds. And hopefully they, when they come back, they'll appreciate how important supporters are to sport.
Let's hope we get there. Look, time is moving on, and there's two things we have not talked about. First of all, robot wars. We've got to talk about robot wars, and also we've got JP. We've got to talk about VAR. So let's do robot wars first. Have you met? Do you meet all the robot warriors? What are they like?
Well, I mean, it's not on at the moment. It was brought back by the Beeb a couple of years ago, and then it was canned for political reasons. I think I don't know, I do know, but I can't say. We used to. I used to do a lot of my links were post-production, a lot of the commentary was post-production, because it was too much going on at the time to do live commentary. But I used to go up and film my links up there a couple of days a year. And it was done at the Dambusters old base up in Lincolnshire. Massive, massive, huge, great hangar with this Robot Wars arena with a great bulletproof plexiglass. It was hung from side to side. It moved. People didn't realise it actually moved like this. And Craig Charles was presenting it, of course. And we'd go to the canteen and they'd all be in there and some of them would appreciate the humour of the programme. The thing about Robot Wars, you never quite knew how much we were taking the mickey out of it, whether or not we were being serious or whether we were taking the mickey out of it. And I think that was the beauty of it, really. And it used to tickle me, you know, that people have spent a year and a half building this machine and they put all their love and their every spare second into it. They come into the arena and it'll be pulped inside 3.2 seconds. And I used to find that very, very funny. And, laugh out loud. It was great. And some of them obviously didn't take very kindly to that. But Craig and I used to have to film our links in the morning before lunch because lunch frequently wasn't food. It was simply liquid. And then...
Lovely.
Yeah. You could really imagine. There's a lot of, if you go back and watch one episode of it, they bought this huge... What was it called? I can't remember what it's called now. This massive great thing. For the last series, it was a huge, huge robot. It was about the size of a mini and a half tour, mini car and a half tour, about as big as a mini. So it's on this, it's on the arena, and I wasn't doing my link at the time. I went and got a coffee, and you see me coming. Imagine this, obviously coming into shot. You know, I wasn't supposed to be anywhere near it, and you see me coming into shot with this coffee cup like that. Not only do you see me coming into shot, you see this great monolithic robot coming towards this plexiglass thing. And I knew what was going to happen. And in between me and the robot is a little Robot Wars fan who's coming towards me and have a chat. Well, I knew what was going to happen. I could see what was going to happen. This huge robot was going to be too much for the robot arena floor and it was going to collapse, which it duly did. Now, heroic JP should have gone, coffee down, pick up little Robot Wars fan, carry him to safety away from monstrous crushing robot. What in fact happened was I made sure my coffee didn't spill and went, get away, and walked straight through the chair. That's still there. Someone's got that shot.
I had one, right? Right, so I'll go back because I was doing a club game at my local Llanelli where I'm born and bred. And the spectator who I knew was like giving me jip, right? Oh, he wouldn't stop. So half time, he starts going on again, and I've just looked at him and I'm shouting at him. And as I'm going shouting at him like that, right, Eddie Butler's thrown to me, got a camera in the comm box, and I'm going like this to the supporter like that. And Eddie Butler goes, right, job. Well, what are you explaining there to someone? I said, oh, it'll be a very close game, and there'll be 2 points in it, Eddie. I got out of it. I just managed to escape, you know.
I did a rugby commentary once at the Memorial Ground in Bristol. The All Blacks came over and they were playing the South West Division. Yeah. And the only advantage point they could give me was behind the post on top of... You remember behind the post there was a social club at the Memorial Ground?
Yeah, on the roof.
So I'm sitting up there between the posts effectively, but about 20 yards back. And every All Blacks kick came there or there. And it was about half an hour into the and I'm going, I can't remember the accuracy of these kicks. Oh, another one just flashed past me. Oh, unbelievable accuracy of the kicks from the York. Another one just flashed past me. And I was wearing a big tan jacket that in the floodlights showed up orange. And half an hour into the game, I realised that I was the target.
Oh, yes.
I was the target.
Okay, VAR, JP, just give us your quick missive on VAR.
Love it as a principle, and I welcomed it to come in on the basis that it would clear up things like, is a tackle inside the penalty area? Is it outside the penalty area? We got goal line technology, which was far, far too late coming in. We needed that years ago, so welcome that. I welcome VAR for linear decisions. I hate this business with the offside being slowed down, and an armpit's offside. That's not necessarily the fault of VAR, that's the offside law.
Why did it make it so difficult, didn't it?
It is. The handball thing, again, it's not VAR's fault, it's the handball law.
Yeah. So
what I don't think is, there's two things. It takes too long to make some decisions. Referees should go straight over and see a screen. They shouldn't be guided by the VAR official in Stockley Park as to what they might see on the screen. they should go there with a completely fresh look. And I hope that's happening on every occasion. So they're not going there with a preconceived idea. And I think that there should be explanations when the fans come back in. It should be clear and obvious to the fans why they're taking the decision.
Well said, JP. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, one thing, no one asked JP, what's your favourite ground You've commentated that. And then another thing, what's your favourite ground for atmosphere?
My favourite ground that I've commentated in would be in Turin in 1990, the World Cup semi-final, England against West Germany. Bobby Moore was in the co-commentary position with me. It was a wonderful game of football. Unbelievable atmosphere. And because of the meaning of it, because Bobby was alongside me, when England lost, Bobby was in tears, I was in tears, and I realised what England meant to Bobby that day. So that would be my favourite ground I've ever commented on for that one moment, I think. And for atmosphere, and you'll see it hopefully in Euro 2020 played next summer, a full Wembley for an England-Scotland game. Something. Do you know, I've never been to Wales for a Rugby Union International. I'd love to go. And I'd imagine it's like that. It is absolutely tribal. It's fantastic. That atmosphere of England-Scotland at Wembley is just like nothing else.
Best kit, JP? Worst kit, I should say, for picking up names and numbers?
Oh, some of the ones now. Some of the ones, I did a game, I think it was Monaco this year. They're wearing I don't know what the weave is, but when the floodlights pick it up, the back goes completely white. You can't see any white numbers on effectively a white background. Not a good idea. So that was very difficult. My favourite colours of all time, red, white, with a little bit of black trim, 1976, Bristol City, promotion kit. That is the best kit that has ever been seen.
You must be happy now what Bristol are doing as a city, you know, with Steve Lansdowne there, the rugby and the football all together, you know, because it's a great sporting city, isn't it? And, you know, glad to see that, you know, they're on the up.
Wonderful. And they played cricket one day, Somerset and Gloucestershire cricket as well. Mm-hmm. And they played a cricket match at Ashton Gate in the era of Botham, Richards and Garner.
Oh, lovely.
Richards and Botham went out. And the Spurs obviously in the middle of the pitch. First ball, bang out the stadium. Second ball, bang out the stadium. Third ball, bang out the stadium. It was brilliant. Brilliant.
I got to say, Ray, before you finish, you remind me of, you know, the vinyl sleeve of Bohemian Rhapsody, the way they look in there. I don't know what you've done to your light over there, to be honest.
It's just gone dark. I'll take that, Chippy. I'll take that. JP, have you ever been tempted? I'm sure you've been asked this before. Have you ever been tempted to go all Brazilian on a goal commentary and give it the goal, 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 and go on for about a minute? I'm sure you've done it, but I don't know if you've done it and it's been transmitted.
Yeah, I have. When I went back to the BBC in 2002 for the World Cup, Bob Shannon, who's now very, very high up in the BBC, was in charge.
Is Bob now?
And he said he wanted me to make an impact when he brought me back to the BBC. We started roughly the same time at the BBC years and years ago. He said he wanted me to make an impact. So one of the first games I did in World Cup 2002 was to do that. A long goal, went on and on and on and on and on. And I said at the end of it, I've always wanted to do that.
Fantastic.
And I'm not too sure it went down too well with all such.
And also, one... One thing also, you're saying, because like we do a little bit of research on all our guests, right? So yeah, the commentary was used in the Sopranos.
Yeah, I know.
What was that?
It had nothing to do with me. I found out later that it was his favourite programme, wasn't it? I've only just started watching the Sopranos all these years on.
That's brilliant.
I'm a big fan. So, yeah, that was some bizarre things have happened. I got an invite one. Can you come and act on a Doctor Who? Straight to DVD or CD thing. So, So I went along with all these actors, and Peter Davison was the doctor at that time. And we did I played, would you believe, a sports commentator called Garney Diblett. I got killed off and had to do a death scene on it. I got eaten by aliens. And so I was in Doctor Who and various things, and movies and animated movies that have gone to Hollywood. It's fantastic, really. I've been so lucky.
Amazing.
JP, you've earned every success you've been able to enjoy. You've earned every success. Time has beaten us. It always happens, Jiffy, doesn't it?
Yeah,
grateful,
yeah.
Grateful thanks to Kerry London, one of the leading insurance brokers who you can go to for expert advice. Thank you to Kerry London for sponsoring this second series of Jiffy and Stubbsy. And JP, Jonathan Pearce, thank you for spending time with us today. Really enjoyed talking to you. Jiffy, obviously, I've worked with Jonathan down the years. You're not going to find a better bloke than today's guest. And it's a great pleasure to be in your company, JP.
Thank you very much. Scaramouche, can you do the
thing?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening, B.
Hey, Galileo!
Galileo
Piccolo!
Take care, guys. Look after yourself.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Jiffy and Stubbsy. Hope you'll join us again. Please hit the subscribe button.